Hey, we all like going out to eat. We talk about it all the time. But do we ever stop and think what happens behind those kitchen doors? That's what this show's all about. The couple of guys who've spent a few years behind those doors. They're going to tell us the real deal, the stories today here, starting with our host, Chef Pascal.
Thank you for the introduction. We have an icon restaurateur.
We got legends in the house today
here. Yeah. Mr. Ed Lee, founder and partner of Wahoo Tacos.
And I just want to hear Chef Pascal say Wahoo again here.
Yeah. Wahoos.
Wahoos. Because in French you would say Wahoo. You'd Wahoo. Say it different if you saw it. Wahoo.
Is it Wahoo? Yeah.
I don't think there's a word Wahoo in French, probably.
No. This is really this side of the world. I know a little bit when you start that, but can you just remind us? Because you start the first location, I think, in Costa Mesa on Placentia or Superior?
Placentia.
And you just had your anniversary over there. Yeah. I was invited to go over there. The original store is still there. And what was it, 40 years or something like that?
38 years.
1988.
Yeah, 30 years, okay. We're celebrating 38 years together.
Wow.
Yeah, so the family, we still like each other.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, so you start, and you still are, taking care of your enterprise with your two other brothers.
Correct. So there's three of us. Wing and I started together. He was front of the house. I was back of the house. And then Mingo came along very shortly. Actually graduated from here, Zot UCI. So he, and then so the three of us slowly scaled the company together. Yeah. And Mingo's our CEO now. He's the big huncho.
So what was I've heard this story before from you and Wing when they've come in here. But tell us, what started this? Did you, because your parents were restaurateurs here.
Yeah, so my mom and dad had restaurants back in Brazil, too. So Wing, myself, and my little brother Mingo, we all born and raised in the restaurant and raised in Brazil. So we moved up here in Orange County and got involved with the surf industry really young in our lives. And Wing and I were in career paths, so we knew the restaurants really well, and we also knew the surf industry a little bit. But
how did you know the surf industry?
I grew up in Newport Beach. My dad was, I have a blessed life because my dad moved from China to Japan to Brazil to a small farm town in Brazil to Newport Beach, California. So we came here in 1975, went to Newport Harbor, started surfing because everybody surfed back then.
So it's a fusion of culture because, you know, you're from Brazil, you give yourself an image of the Hawaiian cuisine. But you serve tacos.
Yeah.
No. So who came up with that idea, the concept?
So Wing and I were in this really weird spot because my parents wanted us to go to law school.
To law school?
Yeah. Can you imagine us lying in law school? So on the way to law school, Wing got into law school. I got in, but Wing got into a much better law school. And then I went surfing in Mexico. Wing took me surfing when I was 14 the first time, surfing in Mexico. So we grew up going down to Mexico. Our Spanish is pretty decent. And that's when we saw the fish taco. And we're like, wow.
Nobody was doing that here.
No one was doing it in Orange County. But everybody that surfs knew about fish taco.
Okay.
So when we came back home, had a discussion with the family. They thought about it and was our last shot. So Wing and I had to, if we failed, we would have had to repay my parents' money. But my parents lent us about $70,000.
Yeah.
And we opened our first original store.
Best investment anybody ever made here, right? Turns out, right?
Thank God, my mom and dad, and they allow us to open. Yeah, that's how Wahoo's was born, because we were surfing down there all the time. Yeah. And back in the days, it was like, let's say, 50 cents a taco down in Baja, and Corona was like 70 cents. So that's how we started.
And the name came from where?
So there's a lot of people, I know, there's a lot of people want to take credit for the name, but the name came when my little brother, his wife Cindy, which she's our CEO right now of our company, they were in Hawaii, Mingo caught a fish, Wahoo, and he said, hey, we should name it Wahoo's Fish Taco, and I said, that's such a weird name, but he goes, people say it, and then they would remember. So for
they
a while,
sure do.
People were just calling us the Wahoo's brother or stuff like that.
So did you ever use Wahoo fish?
Oh, yeah. It's called Ono or Wahoo. Yeah. So we're the largest Wahoo buyer when it's in season. We're the largest Wahoo buyer between that and Mahi Mahi.
Did you ever go fishing?
Not me. I'm not a fishing person. It's the weirdest thing. I keep getting asked that, but I surf, but I don't like being in, I don't like being boats or anything else.
You still surf?
Oh, yeah. Wing and I, Mingo jumps in the water.
Tell me if I'm overstating it. The story has built, the legend of what you guys have built here locally has preceded you here. Everybody knows the story of Wahoo Fish Tacos. And you start from this one place, and I thought it was, maybe it was you, maybe it was Wing when he was here one time, kind of said, this was something fun that would allow us to surf. So we could make some money, and then we could go surf. But the object was to be surfers and to hang out and surf as much as you could.
You know, I find out about your place in 1988, when I opened my restaurant the same year, one of my cooks, he was serving cooking at night, and he always come during the day, say, oh, I find that great place in Costa Mesa. They serve fish tacos. What?
And you're like,
fish
what?
Fish tacos? Yeah, say, it's cool, it's nice. The guy was from New Zealand.
Oh, and so, there you go.
Surfers down there.
He really appreciate that.
Yeah. And
so the point of my story was that, yeah, you were serious about it. You wanted to make money at it, but you never... Did you guys think this was a chain and a giant corporation? And at some point along the way, you guys had to get serious about it. In that,
How many locations you have now?
Right now, we're down, unfortunately, down to 42, but we're about
down
to open.
Down to 42.
Yeah. We're about to open. Wing negotiated an amazing deal at the airport. So we're opening John Wayne Airport. And then we have our franchisee finally starting to expand in Texas. So we're going to open our second location in Texas. Good. And then 2027, we're going to see 26, late 26, we'll start looking outside of California a little bit more aggressively.
As a chef, from 1998. 88 from now to now, did the menu change? Did some modification were done? Your special sauce, something like that, is still there? Or?
The original menu is still there, but we expanded quite a bit. We grew our menu based on the last COO that we had. And now I think the company is going to shrink down the menu, go back to just doing a little bit more specials every quarter, and go back to who we were. Mm-hmm. Very simple, down to, because our menu got double page. It used to be single page, quick, easy for everybody to execute. Mm-hmm. But I think you get caught up with the trends. Everybody goes, oh, you need to add tofu, or you need to add this. And then you start getting, everybody gets in your head, oh, the kids don't do this anymore. And then you go, oh, I got to buy that. Yeah, yeah. And then it turns out.
I even remember years ago when you're in your location in Bristol, the thing, the menu was on a chalkboard.
A chalkboard?
Yeah.
It was.
The specials were always, we tried that, and then we got away from that.
Yeah.
People don't realize that when we first started, Wing and I would still go get fish on our own. So the chalkboard was about what fish did we have available.
It's like, what we picked up this morning.
Whatever fell out of somebody else's truck. Let's take that. If in 88, there was not a lot of sushi bars in Orange County yet. But when there were sushi bars, they would always buy that shoulder.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the fish, they would almost throw it away because they already made the money on. And so Wing and I would go, hey, how much for the rest of the fish? He goes, 30 bucks. And you're like, okay. And we drag it over to Wahoo's and we butchered that thing. It took us a couple of years to learn how to fillet a fish. But now to this day, I hate touching fish, except when I'm eating sushi. Yeah. But
Can I ask you a question? Because we talk a lot about the future of restaurants here. Restaurants have never been harder to own and operate, I think.
Yeah.
Rents. All-time high. Labor, all-time high. Food costs, all-time high. On and on. It's harder and harder to open a restaurant. And so many of the people come in here now say, you can't just be one thing. You got to do takeout. You got to do catering, maybe. You got to do sell stuff in the store, or merchandise, or other sorts of things.
Especially with your price point. You got to do volume as well.
Yeah, you got to do volume.
It's not a fast food, really. It's
do you guys have to push to try and do breakfast and other things and late stuff? And people are trying to say, for a long time, restaurants could just live off of a few hours of making food at night or in lunch or something here. I don't know, is that possible anymore here?
That is still possible, but it's not easy to do. But we learned for the last 2 years, you got to stay in your own lane, too. You can't be all to everyone. So you got to maximize your hours that you are in the restaurant. So what we did is extend it a little bit. So we did add breakfast, but we did not. And now it's breakfast all day. But it's a very simple burrito with linguiça or Spam. But that becomes part of the menu, but it's on the specials. Now we're understanding that maybe that will go away in about a month or two, and we'll introduce the chicken burrito. But if you don't stay in your lane and you start going, oh, I got open at 7 to 7, that's right. Where the problem begins, the liability of labor. But if you stay tight within your lane and then do better product within your lane, constantly reinventing yourself.
I had the pleasure to enjoy one of your burrito, because one day when I went to see my doctor at UCI,
go to see the doctor at UCI, am I going to get a burrito before? No.
Who was parked in front of me was a car from an anti-school thing, and they were delivering burritos for the nurses. I think you do that once a month or something.
Every week, Wing goes out and delivers with the love drop.
The love drop, exactly.
And so I experienced this. I say, why don't you try this burrito? And it was really good. But you, talking about that, you always support the community. The people that really
huge. You guys have
support.
Always been, and still continue to be.
So I was really pleased that you went and went to the nurse's office and
talk about the love drop. Yeah. What Wing or you guys started with Charles Antis.
Yeah. So Wing and Charles started that because the way it started was when the pandemic hit, we got stuck. The employees took all the rice, the beans, they took the tortillas home, took the carne asada, steak, a carnita, the pork, and the chicken, but they were like, we don't want to take the fish home. So we were stuck with thousands of pounds of fish. And Wayne convinced a couple people, like, hey, at first we wanted to drop a fish burrito, but no one wanted it. Everybody was afraid of, hey, it's COVID. Why is this,
it's been sitting
crazy
too
guy?
Long. Yeah,
yeah, right. So they were a little afraid. But then they realized, hey, it's a burrito. So Wayne started going to the hospitals and asking, will you guys take free food? And then Charles got involved. All kinds of people got involved and said, hey, we can do this and support first responders. That's all Wing was doing.
Did you do it with KLOS Radio or something?
KLOS got involved. Wing is on the KLOS Radio every Friday to announce where he's going to go drop off burritos. And he's still doing it every Friday.
Good for him. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you, Wing.
Yeah.
So why do that? Is it just makes you feel good, or is it a good PR or awareness?
I think it's in your blood to give.
I think it is. I think it's more than just a PR stunt.
It isn't. It's both. Wing loves to be out in public, and there is no better thing to do to open the door for communication is throwing a burrito out there. Yeah. So you can start conversations immediately when you say it's free. No, don't worry. So it's a good conversational piece, and it gets the community involved. This takes a lot of a team effort for Wing to be able to pull out, including Charles. There's so many other volunteers. I wish I could name them all, but including our partners at Pepsi. They donate water. You get the guys over at Monster. They drink drinks. Vans. Yeah, so there's a lot of people that support Wing's little mission, but Wing gets all the credit.
Okay.
It's the Wing Show.
It's the Wing Show. But does that fit Paul, with his role in the front of the house and you were in the back of the house?
And I'm still there. I'm just kidding.
Any charity that involves different, all type of charity involving in Orange County with chef on cooking, on food, Wing and Lee and Michelle, they're always there to support.
Yeah, I see them everywhere.
Very active in the community.
I think it creates a connection with the customers, because as big as you guys have gotten now, I still think of you as a local fish taco place, an Orange County institution here. Does that make sense?
I don't know many other food group that are so philanthropic. Yeah, we're probably the top one.
Obviously, Chef Pascal's a legend here too, and he's done a lot in the community. But what people don't see is that we have such great privilege because there's three of us. So Wing can be out in public doing the things he does, but I got a little
with
brother.
Crazy Hawaiian shirts and the truck he drives around and all that.
Right. But people forget that we have a baby brother at the all corporate office taking care of all our finances, taking care of banking.
Good.
So without. It's kind of like a balance. Without Wing being in public and without Mingo being in charge, I actually don't even know what I do for both of those guys. But those guys
you're in the back of the house.
So how long did you spend actually in the back of the house?
Really cooking?
Probably there 7-8 years.
Okay.
And then they kicked me out. I actually remember exactly the day I got kicked out. We're in L.A. We just opened a second location in L.A. And the line was out the door. Wing and I come in a little bit late, and we get in there, and the place is a mess. The food is like, it's going crazy. And Wing looked. I said, hey, stop everybody out of my kitchen. Everybody get out and get behind me, and this is what we're going to do. So Wing and I jumped in, and we're talking to each other. Goes, give me 2 tacos. Give me this. I go, and then we added one more guy. Goes, you give me rice and beans, and we got. And our CFO back then, he got so mad at me because he told me I disrespected him, like, in front of the employees.
Oh,
and I'm like,
Wow.
Okay. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding.
Who owned the business there?
Yeah. But because I created the system, and I still to this day tell everybody, when you got to control, just step back for a split second and then regroup in your mind and then attack again.
Yeah.
But if you're constantly frustrated, I just had a talk with our chef. Yeah. But I was there for about 8 years, and they kicked me out. They told me, don't ever come in the kitchen, and you're like, wow.
So what fun is this? I got to ask you a question, though, because you guys have done what I could never do, which Chef Pascal really didn't do, which is you come up with something. I had a bar called Kelly McHugh's in Mission Viejo. I was there for 10 years. It was like Cheers, and we kept saying we opened a second location out in Chino, and that was a nightmare, because when I was there, it ran great. When I left, it ran like crap.
Yeah.
I couldn't come up with... In other words, it was built on me and the couple people I knew in my team. But to get past the owners, to be able to turn it into a system that anybody can do, that it runs just as well up in LA as it does down here, even when you're not around, that's a hard transition.
That is
would Chef ultimate. Pascal, if he had 50 of these around the country, would they all run the same?
I try to split, we have different locations. It's very complicated.
Very complicated.
If you have a chef-driven restaurant, it's much harder to do that. Or if you have multiple concepts that requires a chef, that's much more hard. You guys, you know, I'm not a chef by any means, but literally Wing and I created that menu for simplicity. Now, I also own Toast Kitchen and Bakery, and I can, same problem we've had.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
Another great concept, right?
Now you're developing some new type of a restaurant that's going to be single out places, because I know you changing Toast in Costa Mesa to what?
Nosh.
Nosh is going to be a kind of California
very casual bar.
Yeah.
Back to that question, is now we're knowing that you can't be all to everyone, so we're very making sure that simplicity. Back of the house, just keep it simple. I think Californians, Orange County people now expect great service and good food. It doesn't have to be great food, good food.
Predictable food.
Yeah, exactly. So with those two concepts, that allows us to do much more things within the community. And these are the first two restaurants I have not opened with my brothers.
You're opening with John. Okay.
No, unfortunately he left, so it's just us now running. Mimi, my wife, is, and Don and Naomi Takahata, and now we have a consulting chef, David Fujimori, and his wife, Erica. So now we understand the dynamics of much more clear. You do need almost 24 hours babysitting.
Yeah.
It's not easy to expand when you need a more chef-driven
On these places are more... and customer relation as well. But your wife, Michelle, Mimi, she's amazing. She really, she does the public relation. Unbelievable.
So as that grows, or if that's going to grow into a chain again, then how do you translate those public relations skills? How do you teach others to do
Maybe doesn't want that to be a
chain. I don't know. Maybe doesn't want to. I don't know.
So we thought about that. That's why we had two locations. We downsized just to one. The problem with chef-driven, again, is very much more difficult to drive that car versus Wahoo's is not chef-driven.
No.
It's just me. So it's Wing and I can do... If we wanted to change a burrito, it's the same ingredients, just repackaged. Versus when you have to have a chef or actually train cooks in the back, it becomes a totally different ballgame. It's not that it's not impossible, but it's still much more difficult in this environment.
Even simpler things. We had years ago, not on this show, but on another show, Steel Platt, who started the Art House, turned it into a huge deal and sold it. And it was the first one was in Long Beach. He opened his bar by the same time I opened my bar. And we were about the same size. We were about 5,000-6,000 feet. And it was mostly a bar with food and stuff and hundreds of beers. We all had similar kinds of ideas. And he did what I couldn't do. He was able to build other locations. And he was somehow able to take people from internally and then promote them. All right, you're not the bartender anymore. You're going to be the bar manager over here at this location. And to grow internally. And then somewhere along the way, he got money. And they took this to a whole level that
I couldn't
even imagine.
What they did, they developed a very upscale bar menu.
Very much so.
It was.
But
it
to was make not it dinner menu, it was bar menu.
To make it predictable. It's one thing if you're there, Chef Pascal, or Ed's there, or even when I was at my place, that it all went right. Get out of the kitchen. We're going to fix this here. But to then turn that into a system that you can teach anybody to do anywhere and know that it still functions even when you're not watching it is a miracle.
Well, Steele had I can't think of the young chef that he had. He was very talented. And
is this Vietnamese too?
I think it was Asian-based or Filipino.
He worked with me long time ago when I first arrived in 1986.
There you go. Okay.
By the way, Chef Pascal has trained a lot of young chefs.
I'm always amazed. Everybody.
And he was a very good chef in the sense of not always killing these kids because they all walked out of there very, very well trained and behaved.
And the proof of that is we go to events. I will go down that rabbit hole for a second.
Yeah.
I go to events with Chef Pascal, and people come up to him like he's a rock star.
They say,
you don't remember, but my first job was with you in the kitchen somewhere. And now I'm a financial planner, or maybe I'm a famous chef, executive chef somewhere, whatever it is. Yeah. And he looks at me, he's, did I fire them? I don't even remember that.
<I know. laughs> But Chef opened one, the first, I think, a higher end. And I don't even know how he pulled it off because Orange County is a little weird about higher-end food. But when he opened at the location, I think on Bristol, he was the first sort of high-end dining experience for most
world-eating suburban food and Wahoo fish taco. Fast food,
so we were shocked when he opened it up. I'm like, oh.
Is he going to make it? Yeah. That location? Yeah.
No. So the other story, and maybe it was, I think it was Wing told this once, it said that, so once you guys opened a couple of these things, and it's like this, the first one succeeded, and then you just said, let's build a couple more. At some point, you had to get, dare I say, more professionals in there to buy the food and to run the books and stuff. Because the story I got, maybe I'm exaggerating, is there was a group of friends and family that started this, and at some point, Uncle
so maybe
Joe
we
or
should
cousin
ask Lee, do you have a training team?
Now we do. So,
but did you have to bring in people from outside of your immediate friends and family that founded the first group? And it was almost like you had to let people go and say, hey, Uncle Joe, or hey, Cousin Larry, or our buddy Jim, whoever it is, we need somebody with more skills than you. It was fun. We all started this together, but now we've got to get serious about this.
We didn't let anybody go, but people don't realize, again, there was already three of us running the ship.
That
so
helps, yeah.
When we opened our third store, which was the location in Bristol and Baker, that sort of launched our lives because we thought we can't, we were making okay money. But then we opened Bristol, we goes, whoa, this could actually be a business. And then our mindset changed a little bit from, hey, let's surf all the time to,
exactly.
Wow, we got to really start working on. So we got a little office and start thinking. And the first brother that stepped out of our company was my little brother, Mingo. He stepped out, and then his job was to start finding people to fit or plug the holes that we're having problems with. We knew how to operate the three restaurants, but we took a couple of years off. Like, everybody gave us the advice to stop, get your systems in place, and that's what Mingo did. So we didn't need anybody from the outside at first. So we took some time off. We got all the systems in place that we thought would work. I actually joined the California Restaurant Association, and there's so many people there, Russ Bendel, Joe Goddard, guys that already were Outback or big restaurateurs. They were so kind to give me advice. Even Andrew Chern from Panda Express.
There
so we started getting advice. So my job was not only to cook, but I would go and get advice. How to open that fourth store? What did you do? How did you guys get this? And he goes, oh, you need a... Then we hired our first district manager. Started, how you guys do it.
He's got to go look at the stores.
Now you divided the
three
location,
stores.
And so every three or four stores, you have an upper
district manager.
Yeah. So as we grew, we allowed each, let's say, a store manager to grow to be like a two-store manager, and then he become a district. Most of our employees been with us for literally since we opened.
Wow. That, what's going to ask you? Yeah.
Some of these guys started like literally out of high school or midway through college, and they love working with us because we are... We're small enough to be still very family, and we're still hands-on. But we had so many mentors, whether is in I got the most help because I did start doing the real estate, so I had so many other mentors.
I was going to get, so let's just talk about that there. Do you guys own or buy or build, take a pad and build it up yourself or something? What do you do?
No. Unfortunately, we didn't take that route. We didn't have that kind of money. We have four or five stores that we own, and the rest are all leased out, leasing. But if we're to look outside of California, that is one of the options. But as Wing and I get a little bit older, we're thinking if the next generation wants to come in and help us, then we would expand and start buying more real estate outside of California.
Do you have anybody from your
next generation looking to come up here?
Right now, we don't. Unfortunately, all the people that we have 16 grandkids that could be involved in the business. But I love them all. I love you guys. But there's two that we would love to be able to see if they could come in and we could nurture them to do it. But if that generation doing, then we would expand real estate-wise. If not, I don't want to accumulate more real estate.
Okay, so we talk about Huasteco. Why did you want to open a breakfast lunch place like Toast and now a breakfast and bakery place like Toast and Tustin? What the idea behind that?
Unfortunately, 9 years ago, my life completely changed and the family understood I needed to do something more. I've always been the brother to create partnerships outside. A lot of people don't know, but the family and I partner up at the Kish Bar. Okay. We did the Rooster Cafe. Mm-hmm. So we've done other things outside of the family.
Those are all well-known places. Yeah.
So I needed something else to do to preoccupy my mind. And Mimi and I decided to team up and do Toast. And Toast did really well. So it's done super well.
Where's Toast at?
It's Costa Mesa on Newport Boulevard. But it was more of a neighborhood breakfast place before to sell.
Well, because we did Rooster Cafe, we thought, let's duplicate that, but being a little bit more higher end. And the chef back then, unfortunately, we parted ways, but it became that eatery in the neighborhood. We thought we could expand that to multiple locations if we had the right team again. And then we opened Tustin, but then we had problems with partnerships, so we're still dealing with that issue. But moving forward, we're just going to stay with that. But Toast, everybody thinks that Toast is like 20 stores, but ours is Toast Kitchen and Bakery. We only have one store. The sad thing is this other company that took our name, they changed the kitchen and bar. So everybody goes, oh, no, you have 20 stores, right? I goes, no, just one.
I wish, no.
And then now, and Mimi, my wife, and Dawn, and again, the four of us, we're inside. We were born to serve. We like being in the restaurant. Yeah. I think,
you like the people.
Yeah. We love the service. Yeah. We love the people. We love the customer interaction. And now Toast has given us a different venue to fundraise because we have different foods. So people that are wanting to do a little bit more, and we have full bar. Mm-hmm. So that helps with fundraising in a different scale. Because Wahoo's is very more casual. It's not, and Wing does a phenomenal job, but Wing always helps me with some of the events I need to do. So it works out really well. And we're not competing in the same space. So
a full bar makes all the difference. It moves you into a whole different category and tons of revenue opportunities, a whole different kind of clientele. Yeah.
So are you open for dinner as well?
No. But we do a lot of fundraisers for dinner. We, like with Wahoo's, Wing has done he does an amazing job auctioning himself off.
But he really does auction himself off.
So, but we now been able to auction, whether it's Chef Brian Husk, he comes out and helps us, or now we're hoping that Chef David will allow us to auction. Yeah. And that can elevate, because with
you have guest chef.
So right now we're, I'm crossing my fingers that James Hamamore and I can do something together because it's a different concept.
We got to get Pascal in there. That's right. Yeah. He's got to come over and cook over the good. Yeah.
Well, especially it's very close to Saddleback Culinary School.
See, there you go.
Right there, down the street, two blocks away.
The funniest chef to be back and he'd get in our kitchen and make him really work hard would be Alan Greeley.
Yeah.
If we got chef back, it would be funny.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be special.
But yeah, so I love teaming up with Rich Mead. So the three major culinary giants in Orange County is obviously Chef Pascal, Alan Greeley, which helped me out so much. I'm super blessed that he was kind of...
And shout up from where's he, where was he at?
He had Golden Truffle.
Was right next to Tulsa.
Yeah. Then Rich Mead, which is always... He's over at the farmhouse. These three chefs changed the sort of...
The culinary landscape.
Yeah, they did. They did, all of them. If most of the kids I know worked for one of them in Orange County.
We have three pillars. So we don't know who the fourth one.
That one's missing.
Bruno? How about Bruno? Maybe Bruno?
Bruno, of course. And Antonello. Antonio.
Antonello. What was the other one? Chanticleer or something up in Brea?
Oh, my gosh.
No, that's a long time.
Long time ago.
Anyway, but we... Yeah, so now the Toast is perfect for the four of us. We like what we're doing in the community.
Sorry, that was Lafayette. That's a long time ago.
Yes, right. I've never just... Not many. There was a handful of you guys that took a chance here in Orange County. All right, I'm amazed at how you grew what seemed like just a simple, obvious idea, fish tacos. And now you're not the only one. The other people are serving that too. And you got some competitors. You created a whole space here. What lies next? Do you have dreams and ambitions for more chains? Once you did one, is the urge to do another one? Or is it just to have fun with the one or two restaurants that you are talking about, like Toast?
Yeah. So for Wahoos, where my little brother, Mingo, he's a lot younger than us, so he's got the energy to do a couple more years. So I got to ask you,
you keep calling him your little brother, like he's six or something. Does he like being known as the little brother here? That's my little brother.
My little brother. He's lucky I don't call him the baby brother anymore. But yeah, so he's 57.
I was going to say, he's not 12. No.
But he's still got, whatever, six, seven more years of energy. Wing wants to do this. So Wahoos, we're still going to try to expand. Now, when it comes to the other ones, I think I'm good with the two. I'm happy where we're headed. And then I've been helping other restaurateurs, young restaurateurs, to see stabilize their kitchen, talk to them about issues. So I like that. I'm having more fun. Like, I'm talking to an owner of a coffee shop, and he's young, so he wants to open 20 of these things. And you're like, before you do 20, this is the things that you need in place. So that, to me, is fun. Plus, I get free coffee.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
Pascal said something interesting. I'm sorry to cut you up, but Pascal said something interesting to me when he first started the show. Today, it costs so much to open a restaurant. What would it cost to open Pascal's restaurant? $1 million or something today or whatever. Not just the real estate and the equipment and blah, blah, blah. So with that kind of investment, it's hard to make it all back with one store. You almost are having to prove a concept that you can turn into 2, 3, 4 multiple stores, because that's where the investors, or you as the investor, will get paid back. Right. It's the payback on $1 million investment is so huge today that you got to think concept now.
Well, you can still do a one-off, but it's more dangerous. But those are the ones that it's kind of work. Chefs, they have to be cautious because they can have the back of the house in control. But that issue becomes to me like I look at young chefs. They all want to open their own restaurant.
Yeah.
But he goes, don't forget, you got to be able to do. You have to have a personality that can handle all of the back of the house. And then you got to be out of the person that had to go out and handle the front of the house. And then the ultimate question is, can you duplicate yourself?
That's the whole question. Can you duplicate yourself?
And then the ultimate thing when I tell other people is, if you can step out of your restaurant completely for 6 months.
And it's still running.
Then you're ready for number two.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, 6 months. And you're like, you go and check in, but you're not cooking. You're not cleaning. You're not doing anything.
And you don't do what your impulse was. Get out of the kitchen. I'll fix this right now.
That's terrible.
How many employees do you have now?
Corporate Wahoos, we still have over 400.
Wow.
Yeah, so we have an amazing head of HR. She has to put up with, obviously, not only our employees, but the ownership. Yeah. She's been with us over 20 years. Our company is very small enough that we're still family. Even with 40-plus store, it feels good to be part of that team. Yeah.
But it must be weird. I had somebody, and this is a different business, but it was an entrepreneur who had grown into multiple retail locations. And she said the scary moment was when she realized, I don't know all the employees anymore here.
Yeah.
There are people making decisions, running stores with my name on it, and I don't even know who.
It's a good question. Do you do routine visit to different locations?
I don't as much anymore, but Wing still, everybody, obviously every single employee knows who Wing is. I actually have, now I have to go to the store. Yesterday I had to go to Fashion Island. I'm like, I have to announce myself. Hi. I'm it from the office. And they look at me like, I don't know. He doesn't look like the long hair guy, but hey, let's let him in.
He doesn't have a Hawaiian shirt on.
Yeah, the Hawaiian shirt story I went Sunday, I'll tell you guys off air because it's hilarious.
Okay.
But yeah, so I know probably half of our team, and now it's become to that point where we rotated some new faces, so you lose a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But at Toast, I know everybody.
Nice. You can do that when you have one or two or a couple. But when you get to some point, you can't know everybody in the company, and they are still... they're still carrying your brand forward. They're the ones greeting the customer. They're making the food.
You go, you want to do some troubleshooting visit, because sometimes you hear something went wrong. You got to go see what's
going on. Chef Pascal doesn't know this, but in a previous life, I was an entertainment PR person. I handled Johnny Mathis and the Police for a little while and some other things and stuff. So I was partnered with a couple of guys. One guy was much older, and he knew Bill Marriott personally. He had done PR nationally for Marriott.
Wow.
Bill Marriott of Marriott Hotels. And the story was Bill Marriott, to the end of his life, went and anonymously visited the store. Now, nobody knew who Bill, they didn't recognize him anymore as he went across the country. And that was great. He would just check in and stay, and then he would report back what he saw.
Yeah.
He was constantly visiting Marriott Hotels to make sure they... Everyone maintained the image that he wanted.
Carl Jr. I always did that too.
Yeah, the guy from Carl Jr. Yeah.
I think when I go outside the state, they don't know who I am at all. So, but the funniest one was we went to Japan. We still have that store. And I'm waiting in line like everybody else. And the thing that blows my mind is your menu is being ordered in a different language. It's so cool. That is super cool.
Yeah.
But then I get to the front and I'm like, they're like, oh, they're speaking Japanese. I'm like, I'll take the number one. And they looked at me for a little shocked for a little second. They go, what? And then they pointed at my picture on the wall. Goes, is that you? That's me.
Your picture's on the wall. They can see this. All right.
So I started laughing. My wife was laughing. My kids, dude, Dad, this is funny. I'm like, wow, that's probably to me the most proudest moments of two things that makes me proud. One, I'm still hanging out with both my brothers. We can surf and we can drink wine together. We might not work well together, but at least we can do it.
We do work well together.
And then when we go, you go to whether it's Texas or Nevada or Japan, you see your company and you're like, man, this is, you're part of it. It's like, we created this thing.
We created this and here it is.
And when you get together or when you're on your own with your wife at home and kids, do you cook?
I can cook. I just don't, because I think I've been doing this for so long, I just don't like it anymore. I don't enjoy it. Michelle always gets mad at me, but I've done this literally all my life. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know, but I was the first brother to literally be born inside the restaurant.
Born inside the restaurant?
Well, not in, literally in 2 days after I was born, I started in the restaurant. I have pictures of me because I got in a lot of trouble.
Truth comes out.
1973, I actually was the second brother to arrive in the States. My mom and dad shipped me here so I can be my dad's dishwasher. So I was already...
Shipped you here to be the dishwasher. Yeah, oh, my goodness.
Unfortunately, I was getting a little trouble. Now, looking back in my life, I was not a good kid.
What type of restaurant did they operate?
The Chinese restaurant in Balboa Island is my dad's. And I'm the only brother that lived there. I lived on top of the restaurant with my dad.
Oh, my goodness. You guys actually lived on top of the restaurant.
Yeah. So when people go, you don't have a kitchen up here. I'm like, downstairs is the kitchen. So, but that's why it's like fish, for instance. When you're cutting thousands of pounds every month, you're like, the last thing in your mind is like, do I want to cut fish? Mm-hmm. And to this day, I think I got traumatized with so many.
Too much fish.
Too much fish.
You reverse that, then you go to sushi or something.
Yeah.
You love sushi.
I do love sushi. There's three restaurants I go all the time. I don't want to start naming, get competitive with all the other chefs, but I love sushi. My kid loves sushi, but I think like for you, maybe the other thing, I don't like peeling. I hate the peeler. Yeah, man, you peel. I've done millions of potatoes.
It's boring. It's boring. Yeah.
So the things I think that traumatize me is I've cut a million fish, seems. I peel a bunch of tomatoes, potatoes, and then you do that. You've done thousands, millions of egg rolls, millions of wontons, and to the point where I'm like,
you're just sick to even think about it here.
So when I go home, Mimi is so kind. I eat 5 o'clock, chef. It's a glass of wine. I'm so privileged to come home. Michelle, Mimi gets, it's okay. You had a bad day. Go ahead and have a glass of wine. Yeah. And then I help her prep. So I don't mind cutting things for her. Good. But cooking wise, yeah.
So here's an interesting question. I never asked chef this question, but it just occurred to me. So other than the food that you guys make and made famous, if Chef Pascal had to go out and eat something other than French food, what would you eat?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, we'll start with you. You can't have French food that you grew up with, you like.
I like good Italian.
Okay.
I don't go out that much. I did used to like going to sushi places, probably the same places that we both go. Because we are friends with the chef and the owners. So sushi bar is good to be known and to know who is behind the bar.
Yeah, sure. Oh,
you think you get the freshest fish.
You get the freshest cut, everything here.
So, yeah. And
so would you go eat Indian food or Greek food? Or
no, Indian food, I go maybe. I've done a couple because I belong to a local group. Actually, we did lunch yesterday,
a food club.
Foodie.
Yeah.
Foodie club. We have 5 or 6, and we once a month we get together.
And try something.
And then we went to that culinary dropout yesterday.
That was a fun thing. Yeah. All right, so Ed, other than it can't be food, can't be, forget sushi and seafood and all this stuff here. What else are you going to, if you're, the thing they would never expect you to go, do you go eat pizza? Do you go eat pad thai? What do you go? Do you go eat, I don't know,
steak? Well, right now, Thai food is, if you take sushi out, because to me, sushi is the one thing I don't ever do at home. I don't want to butcher the fish. I want the fish served to me. So sushi is always one. If you take that out, right now, Mimi and I have been eating a lot of Thai food.
There
and,
you go.
Our son is married, our daughter-in-law, Pooja is Indian, so we've been eating more Indian food.
Okay.
And so we can be, so that's what we've been
learning. Learn that, experience that.
Right. But Thai is, I think Orange County finally is getting some better food quality places. And Thai happens to be one that's rising to me right now really quickly.
I agree. There's a lot of guys. I love Thai food.
Good Thai cuisine.
And there's some really good Thai cuisine. Tustin. Little places and all over the place.
Tustin and one on Bristol. Mm-hmm. Great Thai.
Yeah, so Tustin has two that are very, I think to me, very good. And the one on PCH has been there for a long time. It changed ownership, but it's very good. So, yeah, we love Thai food. When it comes to Italian, I don't know anybody that does not like eating pizza on a Sunday. Yeah. But then that's a whole different ballgame. Man, there's finally some
differences. Pizza is more American than Italian here.
Yeah. And I'm from the Midwest. People fight over whether it's Chicago pizza or Detroit pizza or different kinds of pizzas and stuff here.
Not the real thing.
I know. To me, it's simple Napoleone with a glass of wine. But also, what drives me, like every other parent, is where your kids want to eat.
Yeah.
You might be thinking, I want to eat Italian, but my kid he's a beast in a sushi bar. That's why we've known sushi bars really well, because my kids, dude, we're going to go there.
Yeah.
Hey, they are not charging for 2 pieces. It's one at a time.
And do your kids or grandkids want to do, like my grandkids, all they want to do is go to fast food. They want to go to, I don't know, pick whichever one is your favorite, McDonald's or Burger King?
My kid is married and he's 28 and we taught him well. He's got a good fine palate. He likes a good sake with his sushi.
Wow.
He drinks wine. He likes the finer things in life right now. So he's the one that chooses the restaurants that we're
going to eat. Are we losing some of that? We talk about that a little bit here, that how people don't drink wine as much as they used to. Wine sales are way down. Are we, the younger generation, I'm going to sound like an old fogey here, are they losing some of that palate? Are they going back to just too much Uber and fast food and quick food and simple food? And I know comfort food's back in, meatloaves and those kinds of things.
It's not for
either of you,
to say, because he doesn't really have dining late dinner. So it's hard to...
Just everybody's opinion. You say you raise your son to have good taste.
We're stuck. Chef is correct, but going out now and talking to the other restaurateurs, this next generation, and we're talking under 30, they're
the
not drinkers. They want to drink mocktails, which is so interesting to me. That's just juice. You're like, really?
But sugar.
$15 sugar. Juices,
I know, right? It's like weird. Yeah. And they're not drinking wine. I see wine sales dropped. I see beer sales are stagnant. So just that generation doesn't go out. And that's all had to do with COVID in my mind. COVID stopped these kids from going out, hanging out. The generation right above them is still don't mind going to have a beer or a glass of wine or a cocktail and hang out and talk face to face. The younger generation is a lot less. And now I'm looking at when, I'm not blaming parents, but when they come into the restaurant, their kids are on the phone.
Yeah.
They're not communicating even with their own family.
Everybody's
members.
On the phone.
Yeah, including myself. But I always make it a point now to put my phone down as best I can and give the person that wants my time, I give them an hour and then I look. But that generation behind us, I feel bad because the parents are having to struggle with the balance of that.
But kids still love to party. It's not just beer, no, it's tequila and stuff like that.
But so, I look at my own daughter who's 30, some forget exactly what year, and my son loves in his early 30s, and their kids who are 6 and 12, so my grandkids are 6 and 12, and they live off of Uber Eats, or whatever you want to call it. You know, that everything is ordered quickly from someplace and brought.
One thing I want to say, if I go out, I like to eat local to support small family-owned places.
I do too.
Me
like
too.
Chinese, but all Chinese in my neighborhood, or Italian in my neighborhood, just because they need the support.
The one area I see growing in Orange County that doesn't fit that trend are little local ethnic restaurants.
Yes.
Persian restaurants, Mexican restaurants, whatever. A little neighborhood that they serve some ethnic food there, Persian restaurant or something here. I see a lot of those popping. Your friend that opened the bakery over, the Iranian guy that opened the bakery over in Elisa Viejo.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of the little fun restaurants to eat. Yeah, I love the fact that Pascal said that we like to go to small places and taste. Michelle has to drag me along because I don't know how to use the phone like her. She Google, let's go here.
And that's how
we found all the Thai restaurants.
Mm-hmm,
and
exactly.
It's been phenomenal. A lot of Vietnamese restaurants, too.
Vietnamese restaurants,
Vietnamese.
Yeah. Or little Korean restaurants and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Or Arab, a little Arabia up in Anaheim and stuff here.
If you go on Jamboree, there's 25 restaurants in one shopping center.
Yeah.
Which one I do you try to, you know?
So last question of the day, what's the future of the restaurant business? That's the question we always want to know. Is it harder? Is it happening? Because the people he's teaching over at Saddleback, he's had some of these kids come in or talk about it. They don't all dream of owning their own place. It's too hard. It's too expensive. Maybe they'll own a food truck. Maybe there'll be a food court. Maybe there'll be a private chef. Maybe there'll be something else. But it isn't everybody's dream to put their name on the door like Pascal did.
To me, I think the restaurant industry in California in general is going to slow down a little bit. There's still going to be shops opening because the uncertainty right now is that minimum wage is the
what's it going up to now? $15-$20 or something?
Oh, it's $18, and then the tiering, the different tiers between fast food, regular food, that city's getting involved with minimum wage. It's become so uncertain. I have a lot of young chefs coming to me, and that's probably the number one thing I cannot answer. Where are we going to be 3 years from now?
Yeah, five years from now, 10 years from now.
Yeah. Rent is going to be rent, and we know it's going to be high. Yeah. Construction, people don't realize, it's tied right back to minimum wage. To me, the two biggest problems in California is wage and, of course, gas. Right now, we're in that verge of a bubble.
Ridiculous.
Again, it's ridiculous.
Pushing $6-$7, right?
Yeah, but also gas, because if you have a kitchen who is not electric,
I
never thought about that.
That's a great point. Yeah. California is pushing really hard, and I have no idea why, is to get rid of gas equipment and go all electrical, but not to get political here, but how are they going to do support the grids with electricity to run? You can't do pizza. I think gas with
an electric
burning
pizza oven. Yeah.
No, that doesn't work for me. Or
wood. Go back to the wood.
Or let's say the poor Asian restaurants. How are they going to cook with electric stoves? I mean, soup.
You can't. The wok, it won't get hot
fast enough. Yeah.
Crazy. So all of those challenges you've got, I forgot about the move towards electrification because I think it's about the environment or something. And certainly the delivery costs, the food costs, the labor costs, all the other regulatory costs on top of everything here. It's got to be, it's a struggle. Then it's going to be just chains that can somehow amortize and spread that over a long place. It can buy in bulk and do other things that offset some of that.
Unfortunately, that means because now restaurant have to increase the prices on the menu.
And I think they're already pushing the limits of what people will pay.
Yeah, but
the fine dining ones,
they give them the option to bring something better, actually. They say, oh, I cannot sell a $35 entree and being just chicken breast. You know what I'm saying?
No.
So they have to become more creative.
If you're going to pay $35, don't just serve me something I can make at home. Yeah.
Yeah. But so, I think there's still room for growth. I'm not saying that it's just, but there, forget the restaurant. There is no such thing as an easy industry left in America anyway.
No.
So whatever you decide, whether you're going to be a doctor or whatever you want to do in life, it's not going to be easy entry. I look at people that are trying to sell me, let's say, insurance. You're like, that's a hard job because they got to knock on the door and they got to take me out to eat.
I think the key, forget the food and the price, is service.
Absolutely.
Very important. I think more and more of the chain and the group are concentrated on service.
And I think too many restaurateurs have, that's the last thing they think of anymore.
Here.
I think service is at an all-time low.
No, nothing changed. CEOs of a large group of small concept company, they really work hard on service.
They do.
The ones that do stand out, that Culinary Dropout, which is a small chain, a regional chain, they opened the one in Orange. The one time I went there, the service was phenomenal.
Yeah, because you service. Get good food almost all over the place, but you don't get great service everywhere.
When you get great service, you're a little bit more forgiving on the food or the atmosphere because you go, oh, man. That's why I think Mimi and I always say, touch every table on at least once or twice
there
before you let them go.
Go to a place like Popular, the dark room, or this place.
They have dark room, yeah.
The service is impeccable.
We should get them in here sometime. That's I'm bashing, but you've talked offline about places you've recommended that I've gone to or I've read about. And I went in, the service was terrible. Terrible. And I thought, does the chef know? Does the owner know? Oh, my God. That nobody knows what the...
Sometimes chefs don't know how to handle the service.
That's why I said the chef that's going to succeed, he has to not only run the back of the house tight, he has to be at the front.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of guys that are chefs, female or male, that can go out and be a front person and start talking to customers. I don't want to say kiss their tushy, but pretty much sometimes you're out there, you know.
Get them a drink when they sit down. Yeah. Don't let them sit and wait. You have to wave both arms to get somebody to come
over. You know the best
drink
you can get, even on fast food? If you go to, I won't say the name, large fast food chain, very successful, they greet you, that's a drink, with a smile. That's, for me, that's a little toast.
Yeah.
They welcome you. Even if it's a fast food,
I always said when
you
at
wait
a bar,
online and
get somebody a drink quickly, and then they'll wait for the food, as long as they got a drink in their hand here. But when they're waving both arms and you can't even get somebody to come over and talk to you.
How is your day? What can I do for you? It's as good as a drink.
But how do you train kids that are, this is just a pass-through job for most of them. This isn't a career. They're just doing this for a while. They don't have the same passion for it. And so how do you get them to care?
That's the million-dollar question. So we try the best is to show what we expect. And in service, we have this whole list of items that service must be driven into them. And they try to do the best they can. Oh, hey, good welcome. Come on in. You're right. Not everybody wants to be in this industry, so they're just passing through. They're just making a dollar to get to the next step.
But you have a lot of kids these days. They cannot finish the month. They don't have enough money. And when they give you a hard time, that's what I was saying when I was still at the restaurant, say, you know what, I'm going to take care of you, you're going to keep your job, but don't mess up, because this is the thing, something secure. Okay, maybe it's not enough, but at least hold to the, what you have is very important. And kids now start to understand that. Once they have a job, they want to keep it.
Again, how do you get them to care? Maybe it's you care for them. Maybe that starts.
Yeah. Or you got to be able to connect with the kids, talk to them. You become a team. And hopefully we're doing a better job building, whether it's Wahoo's Toast or Nosh Bar, we're building a team of family members to carry on.
I'll give you one more thought. Somebody came in once, not on this show, but another show, and said, how do you get people to deliver service when they're not used to good service? They don't see it anywhere else. So they just think, that's what I do. I walk up, I'm an order taker. What do you want? Here it is. I don't know what the special is.
Yeah.
I don't know what that tastes like. What do you want? And then if that's all they've used to seeing, then that's what they're going to deliver.
Yeah.
Yeah, this could
I
be.
I think because restaurants like yours are gone now, where do you see teach the next generation to service? Because they don't know.
They don't know.
And he talks about, yeah. Yeah, the one guy in here about Chef Pascal, how you put the plate down and how far away it is from the edge of the table.
I've been trained perfect in three-star Michelin restaurants. That's the way it has to be. But Sarah Bacolage, we start to do dining room training.
So critical. This is the one thing that's missing. Otherwise, then we're going to go to, aren't they trying to put, what's the one that Tesla opened up with the robots up? It's a Tesla, I forget what they call it, but it's a hamburger joint and it's all robots. That's what we're going to get to.
That's one day my day. So there's another concept that there's a tumbler. You throw the food in there and it cooks. And spill it back out.
Just throw it back out.
So there's one kid running a Chinese restaurant all by himself. Yeah, he's just throwing, this is the ingredients all prepackaged, ready to go. He throws it in this tumbler. It cooks and he throws it out. And
wasn't the one, somebody was sending us press release, I don't know if it's still there. I thought it was in Tustin where they had robot hamburger flippers on the grill. It was like, wasn't a guy flipping the burger, it was a robot flipping the burger or something.
Yeah,
putting the french fries in and stuff.
Oh. That robot will never do it. The only thing that he will not be able to do is still service.
Yeah.
One day he might.
Right. Unless service is just a conveyor belt. Yeah. It just comes out. The food pops out.
Let's see if the robot can handle the burnt. He burn himself. And then he melts.
I don't know. All right, we're going to look ahead and find out what's more behind the kitchen door. How do they find your restaurant? They all know Wahoo Fish Taco. Tell us where Toast and the other one.
Toast Kitchen Bakery in Tustin and on Kensington Drive. And then Nosh Bar should be open. It's 1767 Newport Boulevard.
When does that open?
Easy Opening was on soft opening last week.
We did soft opening, so it's been open for a week. We're still working out a 10, a little, because we needed to open up. We wanted to open up. So now, even today, I'm going to go pick up the TVs and install them at night after we close. I got the patio tables finally arrived.
Great.
All these things. And so come by and check it out.
We need lunch and dinner?
Right now, the bar is just dinner only.
And where is that one at?
Costa Mesa on 1767 Newport Boulevard.
Okay.
Shout out to Scott.
Thank
you for all that. And then over at Toast Kitchen and Bakery at Tustin is breakfast only, brunch, and we're closed on Mondays.
Okay.
And come by and say hi. We're there all the time, hanging out, Mimi, myself, Don, and Naomi. So we're there still.
And Pascal, where are you cooking these days here? Just at your
home?
Home,
that's cool. And I cook at some friends' home.
Okay.
So, like tomorrow night, I have a little gathering.
You're both invited to come over and cook at my house anytime you want.
Right. Okay, all right.
We'll make fish.
I give you the shopping list. We give you the shopping list and we'll show up.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
There you have it. One more reason to tune in each and every time to What's Behind the Kitchen Door, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.